This episode is sponsored by Perforce. Perforce is the number one version control software that you and your team can use to collaborate on present and future projects. If you don't want to lose your work, if you want to use the same software that AAA developers are using right now for over 20 years, you want to go to perforce.com, give it a download. Currently, it's still free for teams that are under 5 users. And it's very easy to use, and they have instructions to how to even set it up within the cloud. More than ever, people are using Perforce to connect with each other and perform. So you shouldn't be out of the exception. So go to perforce.com, check it out in the link description below. This episode is also sponsored by Unity. Unity is a great piece of software for you to realize your creative ideas. So you can collaborate with the team right now. And if you have a game idea that you want to realize, go to unity.com. It's completely free to use and start planning it out. Unity has been a big supporter of GDux and the podcast, and we highly recommend them as well because developers around the world are going towards Unity to game develop on a AAA level as well as an indie level. So go check them out. As you guys may know, aside from running the Game Dev Unchained podcast, I have developed a school called Game School Online. You can go check it out in gameschoolonline.com because Game School Online was a response to the school system that I went through personally in my college years and actually spent 5 more years while I was working at these AAA development teams to teach and give back at these physical schools. So I've been around a few campuses and we're teaching and talking to students to give them a chance to get into the industry. And I was largely surprised that the system haven't really much changed. Students are going in crazy debt, but no guarantees of actually having a chance to pay them back. And the loan amount is far excessive for what you actually get as a salary within 5 years. So it took me a while to pay that all back, 10 years to be exact. And I wanted to change that. I knew there was a better way, and that's what Game School Online is. It's a system that I believe that's going to be very affordable, but it actually connects you to AAA developers that are working in the field right now on the biggest games that you've heard of. So you want to go to gameschoolonline.com, check it out. And we have a program which is called Becoming an Apprentice that gives you weekly critiques as well as connections to AAA developers and opportunity to do one-on-one meetings if you choose to do so. Additionally, something I'm really proud of is a scholarship program where every 3 months, all the courses, even a month of becoming an apprentice, is completely free as long as you show the determination, hard work, and good work. This is an opportunity for anyone that is on an international level, can't afford an education, want to get in game dev, but don't have the community to help support. So we have actually a lot of students from all over the world who are participating in our program. I'm super proud of that. And it actually, it's always surprising to kind of see how much talent there is out there and just not enough opportunity to kind of give them a hand and let them shine. So Game School Online, check it out. Right now, we are running a character art jam for the next 10 weeks, starting next week. It's a great opportunity for you to kind of go in there and learn. It's a competition disguised. It's basically a course disguised as a competition. So for 10 weeks, every week, there will be a scholar critique, which is what we call our mentor, a scholar, that will give you sage advice on how to build up your character. So if you want to check that out, the link is kind of crazy. Check out in the description below and click through and join the contest. So this episode is a talk from GDux Redux 2019, where we had Kidman Chan. He's been on the podcast before. And this is a conversation, a fireside chat with Kidman about the artist apocalypse and how to survive it. I think more prevalent than ever before. The time has changed, obviously, with the pandemic. But I think unless you are lucky enough to be at these studios that have been kind of embracing remote working full-fledgedly, hopefully most of you guys are at those studios right now. Indie developers and freelancers and people who have been kind of fending for themselves, self-employed within the industry, are struggling right now, I believe. It's a lot tougher. Not per se about the competition, but I think because of the uncertainty with a lot of these studios just trying to deal with internal artists and trying to still get a workflow going, there's just hasn't been any resources kind of concentrated for external developers or freelancers to kind of help them along. I mean, some, I will say that, you know, a lot of developers out there who are really good to have done this a while are actually doing just fine, but I would say a large percentage isn't, because this is a weird time. A lot of people are figuring things out within the studio and the communication is just very poor. And it takes, you know, if I were to equate it to myself, it took me about 6 months to kind of get into the groove when working from home. So you got a 10x or 20x that if you're running a studio with hundreds of people. So imagine that. So I think this talk is actually perfect at this time for people who are freelancing or independent developers that are trying to see a path through this pandemic and hold on. So please enjoy.
So I've been basically working as an artist in the entertainment field for about 15, 16 years, maybe 17, I don't know, a long time at this point, kind of losing track of exactly how many years. But yeah, in a number of industries, I worked in film, I worked in games, animation, dabbled in theme parks, comics, some movie poster development, toys, and yeah, kind of covered a wide spectrum of industries as an artist. So is that what you're looking for, or do you want you want me to dive down in more specifics, or
no, that suffices, man. So I mean, you've definitely been in the industry for a long time, and I wanted to appreciate the different types of industries that you've been in. I think you're one of the few friends and colleagues that we, you know, I've had that pretty much touch, I think, every types of medium and expressions of art in other industries that utilizes your particular skill. Can you expand that on that bit where we're talking? He's being a little modest. He's been in the industry over, like, what, 20 years now? Been around?
Yeah, around that, yeah. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, my first, I guess, major gig was Lucasfilm. I worked directly with George Lucas for 3 years. And then we moved on to work with Doug Chang on a few things, eventually getting me onto Rogue One. So I worked in a number of film projects, and then transitioned into comics, where I was able to work with Dave Gibbons on a project, a number of other developments. So good stuff.
So I'm sure over the years too, being around students, around colleagues, and around people who are just generally interested in getting into these different types of industries, I guess the most common question that it always goes to is like, how much, I mean, what does it really take to get into these industries, to get started?
First, I think if you're starting out in the industry, like you're trying to get in as an artist, I feel like it's important to know first which industry you want to get into and be a very good consumer of that product, in terms of like just knowing what the landscape is, knowing what the what you're going to be working for. So that's like, if any pre-qualifiers, that's definitely one that has to be there. Beyond that, you have to show that you can perform for those industries. So let's say it's games, right? You have to show that you can do, you can develop artwork for the property that you're going to be working for. And so there's three, there's like, I was always presented with like three qualities that kind of stuck with me. It was being fast, having great work, like high quality work, or being just a friendly guy. And so if you can capture what that means for each industry, being fast, being quality, or being friendly, have two of those, and for the most part, you'll be, that'll get you a good leg up in terms of like getting in. I think over the years I've developed, like, I feel like there's one more factor there, and that's adaptability. So on top of being fast, on top of being really good, on top of being super friendly and being easy to work with, are you adaptable? Because these industries, like the games industry, the film industry, all these things are shifting all the time. New technologies like getting introduced. So how, if you're trying to get in, first, are you good enough? And then can you adapt your style or your something about you to make, to be able to fit the needs of a shifting industry? That's what I would say about that. Brandon?
Yeah, sorry. I was on mute.
Yeah.
Us being in the industry for a while now, and the things that, at least the pattern that I see for a veteran such as yourself and being in the industry myself for that amount of time, is the power to endure and sustain. I think if it's more, if we get to get paid for the craft, it's a lot, it's an easier conversation, because then it would be just like, you know, it's good work or not, right? But I think what makes it heavy is either the people or the other stuff when things don't go well. Like when the office or the company or the project or something, all these other factors beyond just me and my craft, did I deliver, right? So right. My question is, what keeps you going, man? Like, I think if we go by the traditional game dev life cycle, which is, I think you've heard of this, about this, like 5 years, right? 5 years is like the burnout mm-hmm. rate for most industry developers.
Yeah, I felt that around 5 years.
So you lived four times the life cycle of a game developer, if we were to factor that in. So do you mind kind of going through, like, let's craft this question into something very interesting. The 5, 10, 15, 20-year mark. Did you notice, like, each of those 5 years being monumentally different challenges?
There were definitely different challenges. One was, like, I heard some of your older talks, and, like, you're talking about artist atrophy. Mm-hmm. And that definitely happened. And then life happened, and then different phases, right? So it's more like in the beginning, it's more like I've learned everything in school, and I've kind of maxed that out. Everything in school I've learned, I've basically used that to my full potential, and I don't know where to go. So then I had to kind of expand out of that. And then over the years, it was more like my role, like as a concept artist, I've kind of expanded, like, and just exhausted all my resources, everything I learned in concept art over the first couple of years. Like, I felt like I got to a point where I couldn't grow from there, and it was a hurdle to kind of overcome. So there are definitely sticking points, like, over the years.
And when you're talking about, like, life stuff happens, just like, I think with age, that comes with it, right? Your circumstance changes, yeah. Or friends and family plays a big role, right, into that.
Totally.
Was there any I don't want to get too personal. Any specifics besides that you would like to share about, like, whoa, this is something I did not anticipate going into this?
Like, I mean, related to work, right? So, I mean, there are a couple of times when projects just, for whatever reason, they just get shut down, you know, and you're not able to, no matter what you do as an artist or in your role to be able to be excellent in that field, just decisions get made up top and you're all of a sudden out of work, right? Things like that. And so what do you do? How can you? This is where adaptability comes in, is because you have to kind of be able to think on your feet and figure out, like, okay, well, everything I was doing was for this specific project or for this particular piece or subject matter, right? And then now that that's been stripped away from you, you have to kind of go back to the landscape and figure out, like, okay, what else is out there and how can I gear all my work towards something new, right? Things like that happen. That's happened a couple times, so.
Right. And so how do you keep your art fresh and relatable with the new techniques that you said? There's this, like, momentum that you get from school where your instructors or mentors kind of lay it out for you and say these are the things that you need to improve. And like you said, you reached to a point where you felt really good and comfortable about those things that you need to improve, and you started venturing kind of different industries of basically how to apply those in different ways.
Yeah.
How do you keep yourself going and reinvent yourself so that you're not going stale?
Yeah, so I think one thing, I mean, a lot of reflection time, obviously, between those, like, it goes in waves. Sometimes you're really busy, but then other times where you have a lot of time to reflect. So I feel like as an artist, I've always been a good learner of, like, principles or craft. So for me, that was what I stuck to. When things hit a wall, I would find something else about the industry that maybe I was weak on and try to learn something new about it. So dive into a different style or dive into a different what I was consuming. I would try to consume different things and try to explore what else is in the landscape. What are people responding to? What kind of other maybe conventions or other events I could go to try and learn something that I haven't learned already, you know? So I would dive into, I try new things in that respect, and it kind of got me through. Sometimes it's altogether, like, completely different. Like, I picked up cooking. I like to cook. So I stuck to cooking for a while, you know, on the side. And then things I would pick up from cooking, I would actually bring back into the artwork and apply it on a higher level. So. It's different for everyone.
Yeah, you got to expand that a bit. How do you take something so different, like cooking, and actually bring it back to the Cintiq?
Okay, so and you can break down art into principles, right? Like you have value, you have color, right? You have shapes and like things that you can do within your line, or if there's different types of quality of the line that you can apply to any drawing or any painting, right? So learning how to itemize those valuable pieces of the art and put them together. I always think of it as like ingredients, right? So if you have your recipe, like let's say, like we're looking at Ni No Kuni right now. So let's say Ni No Kuni has a certain recipe of elements in art, right? It's like it's line heavy, right? It's more about there's not so much like heavy form shadow lighting. It's much more about the design of the character, so that has to be strong. The silhouette has to be strong, and so there's these items that you can kind of list, right? And so from a cooking standpoint, that would be your base, like soup, right? Or like you have your main ingredients that you want to put in a soup, and then how do you make it your own? You got these different flavors, right? It's like what are you trying? Like a couple of days ago, I added strawberries to a tomato paste, right? To actually punch up the flavor. So you can do the same things with your art. Like, what are some like little things that you haven't tried that you could spice up for like if you're playing around with line work, if you're doing something very line heavy, how can you add this other layer to it that is that maybe not. Maybe no one has thought of like to kind of add into the mix. So that, and that could be content, it could be something that you're trying in terms of how you put down a stroke. It could be your line weight. It could be all these things. And like you just have to like really dive deep and like be creative in that sense. So to answer your question.
Of course. So, I mean,
That's
you clearly are showing. I'm just showing some of your work, man. Some of the, I haven't even seen yet. So, I was like, what a dope ass lines, dude. So you're obviously qualified. You're obviously really excellent at what you do. And we talked about a bit how you kind of played around with jumping different industries to kind of keep those challenges up for yourself so you're not bored. Because it sounds like, too, like that can easily happen. And the way you're talking about how food can go back into your 2D artwork is definitely something, at least highlights how much of a better artist you are than me. Because I do not think like that at all. I don't go back and look at my ramen that I'm cooking that day and be like, how do I make my better 3D art from this?
That's hilarious. I
Yeah.
don't know, that's just me.
But what
That's my way of dealing with things, you know. It's I don't think everyone has the same path for sure. Like
But when you
people
explain
have
it to me, it makes a lot of sense. It's like your brain is kind of configured in a way that you can piece things together and then it just clicks. And so when you do bring it back into your tablet or Cintiq or drawing board, you start to see these patterns that your brain just gets practice from all this other art form that you're kind of experimenting. And to me it makes total sense because it gives you the break that you need, because I think a lot of artists are so hunched over all the time
Oh
and
yeah. Well,
get tunnel
that's the
vision.
5-year mark, right? That's exactly
Yep.
the 5-year mark because you're so comfortable doing a thing, right? Like you've gotten to a routine of making a high quality piece, and you have a certain method of doing that, and you do the same thing, and that's how you get it done, right? But you're so used to that, doing that same thing over and over and over. It's like nothing's new. It's kind of boring, right? So that's like how I kind of learned how to take it to another level, maybe.
And have you talked to other artists or developers that shares the same amount of years for advice? Like, what are the best and worst advice that you've gotten from these people when we're kind of approaching past the 5-year mark, the 10-year mark now, let's say, as for an example, and you're just looking for like, wow, I made it through or past the graveyard of developers. I would say 60% of developers who felt the burn didn't come back from the grave, right? But now I'm in the little like 40 or 25% of the people who survived that. But I'm also feeling that dip of like, you know, and I also feel this way like around the 7-10 year mark, especially in the game industry, you've reached the salary cap of what you can earn in your position.
Sure. Yeah.
And it's like, all right, money's not the motivator anymore. Yeah, I mean, I've been lead, I've been in these different positions, but it's just a title, really, at this point.
Right, yeah.
With
I totally agree. With
a different level of type of bullshit that comes with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The challenges is that, really. Yeah.
Yeah, right. So it's a marathon, right? And so how do you there's different ways of countering it, I guess. And it's, I really think it's case by case. Everyone's got a different story to tell and different struggles to go through. So some are like, I kind of feel like it also starts with what you're passionate about in the beginning. Like I have a friend who, we connected on art because we were both really passionate about art, and training in that respect. And so we would struggle through over the years, we kind of struggle together about different things that we were, you just bond that way. You know, you'd have like long conversations about art and what it means to be an artist in these fields, and like what other people, like, yeah, like what else is going on and how people are approaching it, and then why am I so frustrated doing what I do and how can I benefit, like how can I be of value. So lots of conversations around that. But other people, like I've talked to, like they really just, they're not, so they don't need that interaction as much. Like they work on their own, right? And so what they would do is just when they're feeling it, they would they take like a 6-month sabbatical and like just travel Europe for like 6 months and not do anything, and then they come back all refreshed and like good to go. So it's different for everyone.
Have you tried that? Have you gone?
I've done a little bit of traveling, and it does help for sure. You get so much exposure to things you would never think about here, like for us, it's in the States, right? So, but yeah, like, you know, traveling to Barcelona was awesome, and traveling to all these different places in Europe were really eye-opening. Like, you get different tastes of culture. Kind of some insights of how people live over there, and it's very different, you know. And also what you learn about what people aspire towards, and you know, visiting museums, like you get to see a glimpse of what they're inspired by. So it opens your mind that way for sure. I was able to see I guess this is kind of related to my path, was I got to see people like Dali or Picasso and just see their journey, like in over a lifetime, you know? And I think that was really helpful for me because like I got to see how much more love they put into their work than say someone that's working for a game, you know, as a 9-to-5, right? There's a huge level of difference in how much passion and how much more like dedication they put into their work, like down, like so. And let me know if I'm going, if you want to move on to another topic, but
expanding.
I got to see Gaudi, right, for instance, in Barcelona. And, like, he's an architect, just as, like, you know, he did the Sagrada Familia, but he spent, like, he has spent like 10 to yeah, at least 10 to 20 years on like one building, or in his finals, like masterpiece, like the Sagrada Familia, he spent like 40 years of his life living at the place, working on this one building or one tower of one building, and they're still working on it to finish it. And so like looking at the details, like you look at, you can find pictures online, obviously, and it's beautiful, but and you can see, like, gotta get a glimpse of like how it feels. But when you go into the details, like, and you actually talk to people about how it was made, like, and the choices of material and why he, like, every decision he made was like considered. And then so like in he built this house, and like in one of the windows, even like man, down to the window handle, or like the like what you use to like open the window.
Oh. All right, I think we slowly just lost him for a second. Everybody just hang on.
It's just like it's so intricate, and like, yeah, it's like so beautifully done that it's like really eye opening.
Yeah. We just lost you for like 2 seconds, but I think we got a good amount of that. Don't worry. I think I guess my question is like, I think concept artists does this a little better than most other types of artists, where we get inspiration and motivation by actually visiting these sites. I think it's very easy to kind of just Google search a lot of this and just... it's not the same type of feeling. It's not the type of, same type of inspiration. Just hearing a story where an artist was spending 20 years on a particular piece, it's not something it's a digital artist does anymore.
It's like, and who has time to, right? But I mean, just going there and learning these things, like you kind of get a glimpse into a lot of their philosophies and why they would make these decisions as well. And so I feel like maybe not down to the nitty gritty, but just understanding their philosophy about behind why they would do something, coming back to the artwork, I kind of apply some of that thinking. Like why, understanding why you would do something as opposed to just getting getting an assignment and doing it.
And so that definitely gave you another boost past the 10-year mark. Is it something that you feel like is going to sustain an artist, just continuously getting inspiration by physically visiting these masters? I guess the question is, does that ever... Do you feel like that well...
I don't think that's the only answer.
Well, so what other... advice do you have with that?
Again, it's case by case. Yeah, I really think like everyone's going through different things, so probably too many avenues to explore there.
Well, what other avenues do you feel like other artists usually, because the ability to go visit a landmark or a beautiful just remnants of a master's work can feel out of reach for some. I highly recommend it. I'm probably the least traveled person you'll ever met, but it's not like I don't want to. Obviously I would want to, I would love to. How else would that be reachable if they don't have that access to kind of boost themselves out of that rut?
The easiest thing would be to go to a gathering where people of different disciplines or different cultures meet, and then ask them questions about their experience. And if there's a topic that you agree on or relate to, then ask them questions about that. And then you'll probably find that they have some different experiences and different things that they they have learned over the years. So I think just being open to that is extremely valuable.
So these meetups that you're talking about,
I mean, this could, yeah, like GDC or like, yeah, and or what else, E3, like, you know, games, we're talking about games. So yeah, game developers conferences, like, you know, there's all sorts of talks like this one, or like the guy that you just posted before about different topics. But yeah, I think like meetup.com, I've explored a little bit. I should more, but it's really a matter of like how much time I have these days. So, but yeah, if I had more time, I would definitely go to meetup.com and like explore some of the different interests and different meetups that are going on. Like there's different resources, like Airbnb has experiences you can try, and local newspaper, you know, Yellow Pages, I guess.
Yellow, I don't think I've ever seen that. I haven't seen a Yellow Page for a long time, dude. Not just the phone book, just like a Yellow Page. Yeah. No one uses stationery as much.
But part of that is, I mean, before even going to that, I think there does need to be some kind of reflection in terms of what is it that you feel like you want to grow in, or is there something that you feel frustrated about that you could maybe address? Because if you don't have that in mind, then and you go to these places, like there's no intention there. There's no real you don't know what you're looking for. So you're probably not going to learn as much if you don't have that prep work, I guess.
Well, this is a interesting point right here, actually. So I think when we start going into the industry, at least I had a hard time kind of taking feedback, which was my like arrogant young blood type of like, I whatever, yeah, right? But then it took a while for me, like, well, you know, this is a group type of project, and he knows way better than I do, or she knows way better than I do, and it's kind of group effort, because we are going to put it out there to millions or thousands or whatever who's going to see this. So it's always good to get find a middle ground, right, without sacrificing the expression. But then now later in my career, it's like, well, this guy, I'm back to like, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. I know what that is. Do you find yourself in a similar type of journey now that, you know, you have 20 years plus years in your belt, and as we've seen with your artwork, it's like, what is it to critique about? Yeah, they like it or you don't. And it must be tough kind of take directions at this point in your career. I mean, draining too. So how did you been dealing with that?
I can see that happening. Yeah. But I feel like they've grown too. I mean, I feel like, you know, when I work with someone, haven't seen them for a couple of years, and then work with them again, most of the time they're in a different place too. So I kind of just engage and approach it that way. Like, hey, we're in a new situation. What is it that I've learned that I could provide? And are they doing a good job? And where are they doing a good job? If there's something that I'm maybe qualities that they had that were maybe I would consider annoying, then how can I what can I bring to the table that would counter that or would add to the value of the product regardless? I don't know if you agree with that, but that's kind of that would be my approach.
I mean, that's a very political way of going about it, for sure. But it is definitely one of those things that I think
working with... But I think it's also our experiences, right? Because I think production's a little bit more... You probably see a lot more of that kind of stuff happening. And my experiences have been more on the Blue Sky area and more, upfront development. So I guess there hasn't been that much, as much of those dynamics. And if they are there, they're either above or below, like, meaning like things happen on the business side. I'm sure there's all sorts of battles that happen over there. and outside of, you know, like they get to a point where it's developable. and so we do our job and they, you know, just like develop the project, and then after that it hands off to production. So, and I'm sure when you're in the trenches like that, a lot more stuff might happen. But like for concept and development, it's much more just like crank out the work and then get the thing, get the ball rolling on in terms of how the defining the project or defining the look of the project or whatnot. So I think that it minimizes maybe some of those dynamics.
And concept art usually does the kickoff of any project or engagement, right? So can you kind of speak on the experiences where, especially with your roles changing, you've been art director, you've been lead, you've been a senior artist, you've been all over, how that kind of ties in at the end? I mean, have you found yourself at the tail end of things where you're kind of just making sure that the original vision is being delivered correctly in all disciplines? I guess that's the art director role, right? Just like, you know, I painted it this way and you guys didn't do it right. This is how you do it.
My art director experience admittedly is limited. I wasn't managing big teams or anything, so I didn't have to deal with heavy people dynamics and all the personalities that are involved with that. So I think in terms of following direction, it was, and delivering direction, it was much smoother in that sense. Like basically things needed to get done almost like a startup level. And so I would just kind of try and cover my bases that way. So the stress is more like, what have we developed a finished product, and has the vision been carried out enough to where it can handle all of those aspects of the product? So I think that's where the challenge is for maybe a startup development. But something like on a bigger project, I guess that your responsibilities are slightly more limited, or if they are that big, then you have a lot of responsibility in terms of like managing people. And so that's like, there's a whole other set of challenges there. So.
Well, on the subject of challenges and the survivability of an artist, I think a big component to that never really gets talked about as much, or at least shared from a mentor to a student or anybody within the industry, is the people aspect. It's just I always tell this to my my business partner, my friend, or anybody that is willing to listen out there, that people are variables. They have such a huge impact on your career, on your personal projects. You can plan it out as best you can, but if people come with their problems, it just really tosses everything on a loop. So how has your dynamic changed from the beginning of your career, the 5-year mark, the 10-year mark? Like, have you found it getting easier, or are you still going back at the end of the day and be like, oh, this MF-er
you know, just made it a little tougher. That stuff happens less and less. I think because the more you work on projects, the more you find the people that you like working with and they like working with you. So they rehire you to work on things. And then so as long as you're doing good work and you're friendly or you're connecting with people that match your personality, I guess, then the more that you work, like the less that you'll see those kind of things happen. The challenge becomes more about the project itself rather than, you know, this motherfucker or this guy, like, you know, like that you didn't get along with early on, right? Those kind of things are, I think, things that you work out in the first 5 years, And then you'll connect to the people that you really connect with, and those, just, you know, if you stick with them, like, they'll kind of keep you going through the next however long. So that's what I found.
Mm-hmm. It really does become a game upon itself. Working with people, forming alliances, subconsciously or consciously within a workplace. And I've seen this, I guess, in bigger studios and less so in smaller studios. But because a lot of times when you go in the smaller studios, you are there mostly because you know someone, right? Especially late in your career, right? Making that type of strategic move is because, hey, I know someone that's there. Might be a fun thing. You never really go out there and apply, oh, do I want to work on the next Call of Duty, or do I want to work on this obscure title that no one ever heard of with people I never worked with, whose resume I can't even find. So,
hey, there's something, you know, there are definitely values to that too. Like, I've definitely worked on projects that were maybe considered more obscure, or like no one else would ever work on that. But there was something about it that I was drawn to, that I felt like, okay, this could be really cool for me learning something new. And I think kind of my strength is learning something about something that I would have more patience for that maybe someone else might not.
Have you found this pretty useful among your competitiveness or competitors within a workplace, just having the patience to kind of see things through and not different.
I can't say it's better or worse. It's just, that's just kind of just being accepted of myself, mm-hmm. and moving forward that way, and then seeing where things go.
What are the biggest difference between a 10-year artist versus a 15? What was the biggest thing that you saw change on a personal level where you're like, yeah, I'm visiting these museums, I'm visiting around the world, I reinvigorated my passion for art and learning, but I'm hitting the 15-year mark or 20-year mark now, and I'm, you know, it's less like, do I... It's always a reset button because 3 to 5 years is usually when we look for new jobs. I don't know too many people that are staying within the same job for 5-10 years. If they do, that's great. But somehow they've settled. And not really.
And I think maybe
changing.
I can't speak for everyone, you know, because I don't know how they think or what they're going through. But my experience was 7 to 10 years in, I think I was a little bit more competitive. And it took me another 6 or 7 years to get over that competitiveness. And that's a really hard thing to do. And then being able to be more focused on team, that's actually a pretty hard challenge. You know, you could say it and it's like there's things that they do to promote that, but to actually install that into your working method as a, like, let's say a freelance artist or someone who was more on the art side and less on working with development or like on production, that kind of thing. It's teamwork is actually not the easiest thing to learn, you know, in those situations. So I feel like that was a big hurdle for me. So
I definitely can relate to that. I think within our close circles, the concept team is kind of similar to, well, I mean, the environment team is usually the biggest team. But within the environment team, we're not hanging out with like 20, 30 plus people. It's usually within our cliques, which is 4 to 5, within our arm reach. And yeah, it took me a while to stop being competitive. I think the first formative years is like a learning experience, of course. You're trying to establish yourself on a junior level. So there is a slight competition there. And then when you get into mid-level to senior, you're kind of looking around to see who's the fastest, who's the best quality.
Right, yeah.
And job security becomes a real thing because now you have family and mouths to feed. Yeah. So it's more like, all right, how do I, you know, shine myself a better light than this person next to me? And then years after, it's like, oh, my God, we're all going to get laid off anyways. Who cares?
Yeah, and then, the younger generation comes in, right? And
yep.
Then basically, you know, all these guys are getting kicked out of their jobs because this younger, fresher, cheaper person can do everything that the older guy can do. So, it's like that's where adaptability really comes into play. It's like, how can you survive in that with those kind of dynamics?
So I have a question here from Indie Game Biz, our partner for this 3-day conference. The question is, what recommendations? What recommendations do you have for younger people who want to learn more about the art side of the industry, 8 to 12 years old in particular? And this is actually, I want to tag on to that. A lot of the electives now, at least in the United States, have been kind of been taken out. I think there's still basics of drawing within the classroom, but art in particular has been taking a hit. So how do you recommend the youngins get into this where they can at least help themselves pave the path?
I would say, 8 to 12 years old, I feel like that's something that would be a good thing to show interest with your parents and say, you know, hey, I want to pursue this, and they might have a better idea of like how to connect to the right people. But on top of that, you know, there's different things you can research. There's a lot of free tutorials online in terms of how to draw. You can look into schools, like trade schools that are specific to maybe an area of focus. If it is concept, then there's definitely concept art schools that you can go to and you can research about that. But if it's just drawing, there's also, you know, there's drawing schools specifically for that too. So it just depends like where you want to grow. So that's definitely a conversation to have with your parents. And you know, I think it would be a good bonding experience, and it would be a good way to, you know, kind of get them on the same page of where you want to go. And as you know, I feel like that's where teamwork can be installed too. So
mm-hmm. And I definitely.
And then you chime in if you agree. Yeah.
I totally disagree. No,
okay. As a parent yourself, right? So,
as a parent myself, I at least having some perspective in this industry, I think there's two types of drawings, and maybe you have a better, broader view on this, where, you know, if there's not much of a future of a kid sitting there drawing Donald Duck all day, right? Sure, they're getting the practice and getting the trick. But, like, I would want to tailor that towards more commercial type of art. So, I mean...
Oh, the other thing I would add to that.
Yeah.
8 to 12, you should be drawing every day.
Every day.
You have all the free time in the world. So, draw as much as you can. And draw the things that you really love to draw.
So, start with that.
Yeah, if you're 8 to 12 years old and you're listening to this and you're serious about it, you should already have a few things that you already love to draw. So I would suggest drawing just, you know, for me it was Spider-Man, for me it was Garfield. I was like all over the map, like drawing cartoons, like watching Looney Tunes, and just diving into the artwork and like copying stuff for a while, you know, before I learned that hey, there's an actual education and actually go to school for this stuff. Like up until, like, I didn't even know there was school for art, but I loved comics and I loved cartoons and I loved video games. So I drew whatever I could, whatever inspired me to draw, I would just draw that.
Let me tag into that, right? So if you were to go back, knowing what you know now, knowing the career path and how fruitful it could be, you going back to that 12-year-old Kinmin Chan and be like, hey, I see that you're drawing a lot of Spider-Man, but here is a more clear path to optimize your time. What would you say to that 12-year-old to, like, instead of wandering around drawing all sorts of things, what's a better path there?
For me, I wouldn't tell myself anything because I was too stubborn as a kid. I was too stubborn to listen to anyone else. So, I can't say much about that. Much more about that. I was just very stubborn kid.
So yeah, they were like a perfect.
So I was gonna. I no matter what, I was gonna draw whatever I was gonna draw at that
right.
point.
Right.
Right. So.
Well,
if I knew that I was more receptive to listening, I guess, and I had to talk to myself something, I'd say, open yourself up to different ways of learning. You know, there's a lot of wisdom in, you know, like growing up, I actually didn't like Disney drawings, but, you know, like later on, like I learned how valuable Disney drawings were and like how important those methods of drawing became to, and like were such a core for my foundation. I guess like being open to different methods and also having the discipline to stick to a method that maybe you don't agree with in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and look at the, like, kind of have the ability to look at the results, and if you like the results, study that method and be willing to adapt to that method for a time, you know, until you can get to that level, to that thing that you loved about it, and then you can move on.
Mm-hmm. So my last question here, and this is kind of like cornering into 20-year mark here. I imagine at this point you're kind of taking a look around, and recent years is a little better, but this we're starting to approach, like, we used to be the young one in the studio, and now we're the older ones.
Yeah.
And there's not that many much older people that sticks around. And it's this constant thing that I always see when I'm working within the studio, right? I mean, that's something that just never get really taught. You either swing with it or you don't, and you hang with the crowd as much as you can, but at some point you're like, man, where did all the older people go?
That's exactly what I was looking at. Where did they come from? I have no idea.
Yeah. I mean, like, have you given this much thought? Because I look around the studio, it's like, it's not like I gave them a send-off or a goodbye. I mean, they weren't even near the retirement age or anything. It's just that they're gone or working at smaller places or just hanging on for daily life. It's just something that HR doesn't really help us.
Some people, I have no idea, like, and then other people, it's like, I know a good chunk of them became leads or became like more in like director management positions, or moved on to, you know, take care of the kids or something like that. Like, they're just too busy to interact, right? So I don't know where you're going with that question, but
I'm saying we're old.
Yeah.
And it's a young type of industry as far as I can tell. And and I feel like a lot of the at least senior level or leads are kind of exiting games or at least working at Facebook or Oculus or working at Google, something a little more stable where it's less competitive. Not saying they're settling, but in a way it's that seems to be where the market is heading. At least people who are maturing or has a family, they're looking less about the risk. I mean, they're looking more at the risk and taking less of it.
Yeah. I see, from my perspective, I see that games are transitioning more into immersive developments. So like AR and VR is becoming like a bigger thing. And games is like, I feel like there's like a really high bar of quality in games. So if you're trying to get in, like, good luck. It's really hard at this point. But at the same time, I feel like those guys are like super high bar and at, you know, lead positions. So they're cranking out great work. And so the games industry as a whole, like, it's consistent, right? It's like you have your audience, you have like the solid products that are coming out. So it's still a strong industry to be in. But yeah, definitely like it is transitioning now that there's more opportunities. You know, streaming is becoming a thing. AR and VR is becoming like more relevant slowly. And so I feel like people are jumping into these new avenues. Yeah. It's exciting. It's pretty exciting time.
Yeah, definitely, man. There's definitely a lot of avenues. I'm glad, and not to kind of just... I'm celebrating the fact that developers are finding places that they can stay and feel secure at and not having to worry about the product, the end product, being the future of their employment. Like, it's great to have a company like Facebook or Google whose main revenue stream is not games. Because games, again, is so unpredictable. Where our business model, and I think we talked about this a bit with Yashka at the beginning of today's conference, where the business model needs to adapt and change, where we're not waiting on 2-3 years after the product is shipped to see if it's something worth pursuing.
Right. It's pretty, unless you're like a Naughty Dog or like something huge like that has made a name for themselves, it's pretty hard to survive in that kind of environment.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Kinmin Chan, I am so happy for you to kind of guide us through the apocalypse of an artist. It is a real thing that I felt for a long time. I think I was with you there after the 5-year mark, where the burnout rate was very real. Hit the 10-year mark, I was very different in my own experience, where I didn't even bother playing the game that I worked on. You know, that was a really different type of... It's like, yeah, it's out.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing about, you know, working on a project or a subject matter for so long. It's like you get so numb to it.
Yep.
Right? So even, I guess, bringing it back to the art, right? So in the beginning, you're learning about how anatomy, right, and how to draw a figure. Like, and then you do that enough, you draw thousands of figures, right? And it gets to a point where it's kind of second nature and you don't think about it anymore. So, you know, where it gets really fun, like, you have to find new things about it that are fun. So for me, it was like diving into comics and learning about posing or like different things from a writing standpoint that you could do with a figure. And so it might be like drawing a figure that's, you know, like, well, it actually, the first couple of years is more about like drawing figures in really expressive poses, like action, you know, action packed, like fighting, or, you know, really extreme, like, motions or moves, just fantastical things. And then I feel like it evolved to someone drinking coffee, or like, could be really interesting. And how do you draw that? Like, I don't know, it evolves, but you have to find something about it that fuels you, rather than just making it a second nature thing and doing the same thing over and over. So for games, I can see if you're doing something like Call of Duty over and over, you're so familiar with that subject matter, you don't want to draw another like, military guy like in a desert. So what are some ways you can make it interesting? I don't know. After so many years, it might be hard to surround yourself around. You probably have to try and travel or do something like
I guess I have one last question before I send you off. Just to kind of ask for your thoughts about this in your own personal journey. We're both artists, of course. I'm in the 3D, you're in the 2D world. And you're bringing up Call of Duty. Well, I mean, I did feel that. I did feel that at a certain point. But for me too, I took a step back. It was less about the subject, but more about my overall well-being. It was more like, you know, do I want to be one of 300? You know, this is a project that probably would survive without me or exist without me. And I was at a point where it was like, I need to work on something because I got opinions. I got ideas too, you know, that needs to be expressed. And if I don't go out and try it, this idea, this product in my mind won't exist. Like I hit, at least that was my 10-year mark, where I felt like I didn't want to be a part of a big project anymore. I just completely, it wasn't burnt out. It's just, I didn't see, an impact as much as I thought I would.
Or you didn't place importance on impact as much as
that too.
You're growing as an artist. Yeah.
It was just like you know, I started this with like, how do you tailor the kids to make money out of this passion of their word, the drawing Donald Ducks, into commercial art, because that's the viable option right there to turn it into career. Right. But then after doing commercial art for so long, it's like, oh my God, it's just, I'm not downplaying that there is a lot of things you can learn by creating commercial art, but the definition of commercial art, it's a team thing.
It's always exciting.
Yeah.
It's always exciting. But definitely, like, I could see, like, you're focused on a subject for so many years. Even though the projects themselves are exciting in that field, it's like you're just bored of the field, right?
So, I definitely see when you're talking, it definitely resonates with me. It's the subject matter is great, but there's that people quality to it where it's like too many people. And then the idea to express myself gets lost, right? Because it's always, it's that classic example of too many hands on the final product, right? Where it gets kind of malformed from its original creation,
right?
It's a bunch of people touching your clay model. What made it exciting? And I see that a lot with team effort. And on smaller teams, it becomes, I feel it's more pure in terms of the expression.
For sure.
But there is definitely a lesson there with bigger games where they're whole marketing department and stuff that I think needs to be still factored in smaller projects, because you can't just sit there and do your best art, but no one buys it, right? You're not going to do that forever. So there's a balance there that I'm slowly learning from all my big commercial jobs, but at the same time, it's disheartening to kind of go through that path with so many people.
Right. I feel like, and working in big environments versus working in small environments, there are different challenges. There's different advantages and disadvantages. So,
we'll definitely got to do a part two of this for sure. Thanks for kind of joining in and being part of this, GDUX. This is also part of the time where if you want to throw some people your way, where can they check you out? Either an art station. Let them know.
Yeah, I mean, I have an ArtStation account and I have an Instagram. Our station, both you can search for Kinsept, K-I-N-C-E-P-T. I don't post as much as I'd like to, just because I'm so busy. But if I were to update, those would be the places to update. So.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you are liking the podcast, go to the Apple iTunes store and give Game Dev Unchained a 5-star rating. This will help spread the joy and love and exposure for the podcast, and we thank you very much. If you want to continue the conversation, go to our Discord, which can be found on our website, www.gamedevunchained.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at BlueChamps, BlueChamps. You want to catch these episodes live every Tuesdays and Thursdays, go to twitch.tv/blue_champs. Email me any of your concerns or questions that you want me to read aloud at the beginning of each episode at info@gamedevunchained.com. And if you want to further support us and help unlock the next feature, which is the voicemail feature, go to patreon.com/BlueChamps. This gives listeners a chance to kind of call in, leave a message for both me and the guests to answer your deepest, darkest questions and comment on your deepest, darkest secrets. Thank you, everybody.